Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, actually a small high desert town named Pahrump. Pahrump, Nevada, how's that for name? This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell, covering all 24 time zones surrounding the world. It's great to be here, and it's going to be a very interesting night tonight. Chemtrails, the subject, the man who began the investigation into chemtrails, what we now call chemtrails, and who continues to be the only serious investigative on the ground, and chemically, is the only one doing the investigation that I know of actively. William Thomas is going to be my guest. He broke the story on this program nationwide, and he's back tonight with more. That's coming up next hour. There is a story that I was following earlier today on CNN Headline News. I don't know how many of you saw it. However, a Hawaiian volcano, apparently, according to the CNN story, and Keith is back from his road trip and frantically trying to find a story for me, and we'll get it on the website. The basics of it are, though, that there's a rock on a volcano. And this is not just, you know, like a rock. It's like a mile or two. I forget what the size was, but it was really, really, really big. And one of our satellites has seen this rock move like a couple of inches or 3 inches in the last few days. That's a really serious, you know, it's really serious. And they were saying that if this rock should fall into the Pacific, it could create a 100-foot tidal wave, a 100-foot tidal wave that would sweep all the way virtually around the entire Pacific Ocean. Heavy-duty story, and I don't see it in the news tonight, the written news, but I did see it all day long on CNN. So we'll try and get these specifics for you on the website shortly. Unfortunately, the nude body of a child found in a rural area east of San Diego is now believed to be that of the 7-year-old girl who vanished from her home nearly a month ago. They have somebody charged in the murder, blood, they found blood in a motorhome, I guess, and on his clothing, and they've got him charged in the death of this 7-year-old. I don't know. Sick, sick, and sick, huh? 20 workers at Logan International Airport, including 6 security screeners, have been charged with lying to get their jobs or obtain security badges. Now, none of this is related to terrorism or September 11th in any way, but obviously they're now beginning to look very closely at those who are working at airports. Going to get more of these stories, I'm sure. U.S. military advisor is already in Georgia. Now, this is the Russian Republic, immediately next to Russia. U.S. soldiers are going to train in Georgia. Now, in my lifetime, I'm telling you, I never in a gazillion years would have imagined U.S. soldiers training in Georgia, in Russia. Well, not actually in what is Russia now, but in what was a... it was Russia. And it's just, it's impossible to contemplate. And apparently, you know, the other side is not all that comfortable with it either. But it's happening. And just the fact that it is happening, it must be weird for, I just can't imagine it. You know, I was in the Air Force, but imagine getting orders to go to Russia. You know, you're going to be serving in Russia. Pretty weird. Pretty weird. Andrea Yates and her husband sobbed. Get this, and mouthed words of encouragement to each other in court while a videotape played of their children greeting their mother after the birth of her fifth child. Her husband said tearfully, "She's wonderful. She was so involved with the children." The only upbeat person of the day was Alan Greenspan. And Alan cautiously says, it is amazing, but the American economy appears to be rebounding from the recession. Now, that would be pretty doggone good news if true. And so, and Alan's rarely wrong. So I've always thought you've got to give Greenspan a lot of credit, and I do. I think the guy is brilliant, and he has kept the normal business cycle recession and, of course, ultimate fear of a depression or something like that totally away from our economy. And I think he's made all the right moves within his power to adjust the economy, to see what was coming, and to adjust the economy accordingly with interest rates and whatever steps, you know, the head of the Fed can take. He's done a pretty good job. You've got to admit he's done a pretty good job, and I do admit it. Now, with reference to last night's program, I've got a lot of email, lots and lots of email. It was a very good program, a very revealing program. And, of course, my guest takes a view that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. I got a very interesting email today, and I thought I'd read it to you verbatim. Hi, Art. When my dad was working in the oil field after a stint in the Navy during World War II, he was cracking core samples one day in 1948, and from the inside of one core sample out popped a human tooth. Recently, I had it verified as a human tooth by my dentist, and my brother had it verified by his dentist as well. Both dentists said it was a bicuspid tooth from a child. The tooth is almost black. It is so fossilized now. My father got his degree in geology, so he knew what he was doing in the oil fields, and has a sworn statement at the request of my father and brother of this find. He is still alive, 75 years old, and actually in better health than me. Art, this tooth came out of a core sample from a well near Haynesville, Louisiana. It came from a depth of 4,300 feet under the surface of the earth. My brother took the tooth to another geologist recently and told him where it came from, and the depth where it came from also. The geologist got out his charts of that area and said that the depth of that tooth is called the Gloyd, that's G-L-O-Y-D, Gloyd Limestone Rift. And he did some calculating and found that in that particular location, at a depth of 4,300 feet, the tooth is approximately 100 million years old. Art, we've either been here before, or someone else inhabited the earth a long time ago. This tooth, this child's tooth, is 100 million years old, Art. Now, he provides me the name and a contact number, and I have left a return message. I believe him. And I believe that his statement at the end is all you can say. Either we've been here before, or somebody else was here a long time ago. And this tooth is just more evidence of that. In fact, if I can do it, I'll get the man on the air. Or his father, because his father is still alive. I wonder what shelf they'll put that one on. Now, whether it has anything to do with chemtrails or any other environmental whatever, I'm absolutely burdened right now with thousands of emails from people talking about or claiming to have this rash that everybody's talking about. Stuff like this. Dear Art, I also have an unexplained itching and irritation all around my thighs, inner and outer. I live in Toronto, and my girlfriend also had a similar ailment, and she's in Newfoundland. Several of my friends have complained of it as well. The unifying factor is that none of us have A, changed soaps, B, altered diets, or C, spent any time in the sun. This is Canada, after all. This is bizarre. And then he makes some comments on the show, very nice comments. Thank you. It's Patrick, Canada. And then I got this today. Hello, Art. I do not have good news and do not want to scare anybody without facts, but here goes. I'm a health insurance agent in Bakersfield, California. This time not a client, but an acquaintance has died after a two-week hospital stay. He had the following symptoms. First, a red rash appeared on his stomach, then spread to his back, ran a fever topping out at 103, soon developed tremors only in his hands. He did not have a cough or any other symptoms associated with cold or flu. The doctor could not find any reason for the fever and the tremors, so he admitted the man to the hospital. While he was in the hospital, the red rash on his back began to bleed small drops of blood. While in the hospital, the doctor had him on four different kinds of antibiotics. None of them had any effect on the symptoms. The man died in the hospital after a two-week period. Cause of death was slated as renal failure. However, 4 weeks later, they're still working on the autopsy results, trying to determine any exact cause of death. I'm aware of one other person with a red rash condition. They are thus far okay. Do you think it could be radiation from HARP, or radium poisoning from chemtrails, or I don't know. Good luck to all. Nora, and I will not give you Nora's last name for obvious reasons. More in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
Another email. A lot of interesting emails tonight. Art, I live in the mountain approaches to the Sierra Nevada in Northern California, east of Stockton, small town of Calaveras. Oh, that's where the frogs are, right? Calaveras County. We've had today, Wednesday, extensive chemtrail activity, jets being seen weaving in patterns back and forth. It's been happening since about 1998 with lulls from time to time. Being a professional artist, I pay attention to the quality of light striking the landscape, and I've noticed a yellowish tinge to the sunlight, and at times an oily rainbow quality to the chem or contrails above my home. We are constantly hearing a dull roar of jet traffic as we live near a very high traffic airport or military base, neither of which exists for about 100 miles. In the morning, we wake up to chemtrail Xing in the sky, the early morning sun shining through, and live with hazy days from then on. Yeah, that's right. That's what it does. It gets hazy. My guess is the atmospheric warming prevention attempt, but that's just a guess. Many people I talk to seem not to even notice the extensive patterns in the sky, but I see them on even television commercials, inadvertently videoed in television news reports. I hope someday we find out what it really is. Well, you're going to want to listen to tonight's program. That's for sure. We've got the man who broke the story years ago on this program, and he will update you with the absolute latest tonight. The hands of our doomsday clock, which for 55 years has been a symbol of nuclear danger, were moved not one, but 2 minutes closer to midnight on Wednesday. Reflecting the possibility of terrorism, relations between India and Pakistan, and other threats, the symbolic clock kept by the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists had been set at 11:51 since 1998. Now it's up to 11:53. George A. Lopez, the publication's chairman of the board, said it has never been moved in response to a single event. Still, he said, the attacks of September 11, combined with evidence that terrorists were attempting to obtain the materials for a crude nuclear weapon, should have served as a wake-up call to the world. He said, the world has focused on short-term security rather than solving long-term problems. The international community, said Lopez, simply hit the snooze button rather than raising the general alarm.
Huh.
He said factors like concern about security of nuclear weapons, materials stockpiled around the world, and the crisis between the nuclear powers, India and Pakistan, figured into their decision to move it ahead, along with September 11th. 2 minutes. On one more note about last night's program, again from an emailer, and this can be true or not, I don't know, Darlene writes, you know, I can't remember your guest name, but you asked him about the word replenish in the Bible. I've been talking about that for a few days, right? The guy's response was incorrect about the definition of that word. Re is a prefix from Latin days, and so is the word plenish. They go from Latin to French. There has been no change in the meaning of that word. It does mean refill or to fill again. You know, I just don't like it when people give out false information to support their cause. I took Latin for 2 years, French for 2 years in high school, and some things you just don't forget. Latin has been a dead language. Means it has not been changed for some time. Well, sure. Well, before the 1600s, actually. You go look all this up in a good dictionary like World Book. The best history of a word. Just thought you ought to know. I think we've been here a long, long time. Darlene. Yeah, I do too, Darlene. Doing the program I did last night, I think, is valuable, very, very valuable for listeners. First, to make you think about the whole thing. Secondly, to decide if what you're hearing is viable or not in your mind, or which scenario is more viable. And to me, sitting in the middle on all of this, clearly the more viable of the two is not to believe that we've only been here 6,000 years, that everything was suddenly created by God 6,000 years ago, boom. That is not to say that I do not believe in a God. It's just to say that I don't think that's the way it happened. I think we've been here, a long time. Long time. In fact, I believe pretty firmly that civilizations have come and gone. I give you, again, the tooth story I just read you. I believe that. I mean, a human tooth comes from 4,300 feet down. And it comes right out of a core sample. Now, I'll tell you, that's a pretty damn good way to, you know, date something. And if anybody has any other explanation for it, I'm very much going to try to get this man on the air, obviously. This is one of those things that's in a vault right now. It's not put up on a shelf. We can get the first-hand story behind the whole thing. Simple as that. Can you imagine, though, being, you know, working on a drilling rig and being down in Louisiana, 4,300 feet down, bringing up a core as, you know, the geologist or whatever you are, and you're just normally doing your work and you crack open this core or whatever they do to a core. I assume they crack it open somehow. Crack is probably not the right geological term, but they get it open, and they find in the middle of it a human tooth. Black, but clearly human, verified as human. And it would have to be 100 million years old. Now, I can't think of too many scenarios that would easily explain that away. Unless the guy had a kid's tooth in his pocket or something, as he cracked the sample, why it fell out of his pocket, short of that.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kissing.
Short of that, I don't see anything at all, do you?
My summer wine is really made from all these things.
Open lines coming right up.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Town on silver spurs, the jingle tune, a song that I had only sang to just a few. She saw my silver spurs and said, let's pass some time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer wine.
We take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Good morning from the high desert. Let's play this one out. It's a hell of a piece of music.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
Good morning. Wildcard Line, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Art. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I'm George from Queens, listening to you on WABC.
Yes, sir.
I have a question, or I'd like to pass a notion by you regarding some of these genetic engineering studies that are being done or work that's being done.
Yes.
You've expressed on the air your concerns about genetically engineered the pigs that are currently being raised where they're trying to create human heart transplants.
Oh, yes.
Remember that?
Yes, very well.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to render the pigs more acceptable for the transplant situation so that they're not as highly rejectable, I understand.
Wow. Yep.
And
in doing so, they mix some human genetic properties. You know, I'm not a geneticist, but I know they are putting some human genetics or properties into the pig's DNA.
Yes. And basically, they're trying to render these hearts more acceptable.
Oh, I get the idea.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Now, there's a lot of enthusiasm and hope that they're trying to provide hearts for humankind, that people who have problem hearts.
Of course.
But on the downside, and I guess we all recognize, or most of us recognize, that there's a problem, especially the concern about virus jumping from one species to another.
That'd be one.
Yes. Now, I want to ask you or pass this idea. I don't know if anyone's ever mentioned it or talked about it, but do you remember back in the 60s, the groundbreakers for human heart transplants, such as Christian Bernard?
Of course, yes.
And like, do you remember what they were using in the beginning?
Yes.
For their heart transplants? Remember?
The machine. You're talking about the machine, right?
No. I'm talking about...
early Bernard transplant.
Baboons.
What?
Remember baboons?
That's right, because baboons, well, they're the closest to us, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. I do, so, oh, I see, I know exactly.
You know where I'm headed?
Yes, I do now.
I was wondering if anyone ever did a study.
AIDS.
That tried to figure out if that was the, that could have been a potential.
Damn right.
Where AIDS may have jumped the species.
Oh, you're damn right. It sure could have been. Really good thinking, sir. Really, really, really good thinking.
You know, I wish, you know, remember when you had that microbiologist on 2 weeks ago?
Would have been a hell of a question, huh?
At New York University?
Yeah, where were you then?
I tried to get on. It was hard.
All right, well, we'll do it again, and you can be doggone sure I will ask that question. My answer would be, I bet a lot of money you're right.
I wonder if that really was the ground basis for the species jumping of the AIDS virus.
Really good point, sir. Thank you very much. Very, very, very good thinking. Could be. Could easily be, and would we be told? Probably not. Sure, that's in the realm of possibility, isn't it? Yeah, that's one of the things that concerns me. I am not against medical advances. God knows it would be great to get a heart that would keep you alive. And my only concern is that it would be it a pig's heart, I suppose, or whatever. But are we taking the proper precaution as we jump and experiment and try and figure out how we can do this? And we're getting close. You know, I'm sure we'll do it. I just hope we don't have a major oops in the process of doing it. East of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning. Hello, hello.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
It's Richard from London, Ontario, CJBK.
Yes, sir. Way on up there.
Yeah, well, I got some great information for your viewers and yourself. And
I have listeners. TV people have viewers.
Oh, listeners, yeah. Sorry.
Yes. All right.
About the chemtrails.
Yes.
I've spoken and emailed William Thomas several times. He's a great man.
Yes, he is.
And hopefully he's listening right now. I got to get up early for work. So
what are your comments for
him? My comments, first of all, who's behind these kind of things? I'm with an organization, by the way. I wish not to give my organization out, but we research all sorts of stuff from GOES.
Oh, wait. Are you connected to a government organization?
It's funded
by the government?
No, a private organization.
It's funded all privately?
Yes, it is. And we research the paranormal phenomenon like ghosts, UFOs, government conspiracies.
All right.
Okay. For 2 years now, I've been watching the skies, taking pictures, videotaping with excellent equipment. And so far, this is what we came up with. Who's kind of behind this whole thing? Who runs it? Who knows about it? Well,
we figured
the president knows, NASA, different government agencies. The FAA and NORAD, they are definitely tracking it. NASA and NOAA tracking satellite photos.
Okay, all right. Let me stop you right there.
Yeah.
Here's the problem that I have. You've just named off a lot of agencies. All right. Forget the president for a second. All those agencies you named off. Oh God, there's a lot of civil servants. There's so many civil servants.
Hey, do you want to know why they're doing it?
It's just that I have doubts that such a secret could be successfully kept by that many people.
Well, it's because back in the mid-80s, what happened was they knew that the ozone layer was, the depletion of it was just going down and down, getting bigger. And radiation was attacking Earth. And more people are getting skin cancer. We've looked into it.
Oh, that's all true.
And what's happened here is they had a bunch of scientists in the mid-80s that stated, okay, aluminum is like a conductor for this, and let's fix it up.
Now, is this all conjecture on your part, or what evidence do you have to back up what you're saying?
Well, we have evidence. We have lab reports from the MOE here in Canada, stating that in a small town called Espanola, which I have those reports through the Freedom of Information,
yes,
that they are definitely spraying, and the chemicals of aluminum powder is shown with other funguses and molds and viruses.
All right. Have you given this information to William Thomas?
Yes, I sent him some stuff, and like I told you earlier.
All right, well, when he gets on the air, I'll ask about it. How about that?
Okay. I'd like to also mention that I believe that the government's not only doing that, the military, that they're using other stuff, chemicals, like what you're talking about, what people are talking about, the itchiness that they're getting.
Yeah, I haven't ruled out, okay, thank you. I haven't ruled out the possibility that this rash or whatever it is might not be related. It's, you know, within a giant realm of possibilities, but you got to imagine it's possible that it's one effect. But we can't say that. You know, there's just not enough we can say for sure. And about the only person I know who can is William Thomas. He does know certain things for sure. And there aren't too many people that I know of that you can talk to about chemtrails who know very much at all for sure. William Thomas is one of those guys. So that's the best we can do tonight. It's pretty good. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening.
How are you this evening?
Spiffy.
Busy. I can imagine so. I was calling reference to the speaker you had on a little while ago about creation.
The word I used there was spiffy, which is to mean better than good, feeling excellent, feeling groovy.
That works for me.
Okay.
Okay, it's had a couple. First of all, a quick comment. You had questioned the available area inside the ark for the number of kinds of animals to be brought in.
Nostril breathers.
Yes, the nostril breathers, yes.
Yes.
Now, the Bible tells us that the ark was approximately, there's different versions of the length of a cubit, but,
yep.
But averaging them out, you come up with about 450 feet long, 75
yes.
feet wide, about 45 feet high.
Right.
We're also told that it was to have three decks in it. This would be just a little bit under 100,000 square feet of floor space, or
right.
about 1.4 million cubic feet of internal volume.
Okay.
That's equivalent to more than 500 railroad boxcars.
Okay.
Just to give you a mental picture of the available volume in there.
Okay.
But then you went into, the gentleman called about the tooth that he had found.
That was an email.
It was an email. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Before you jump there,
yes.
I thought Dr. Ken Hovind, who was on last night, sort of got most tripped up by somebody who sent by computer. You know, how could he have shoveled all that poop? You know,
sure.
Nor could 8,000, it seems to me, pairs, even babies, fit in there.
Well,
coexist.
That much volume, 1.4 million cubic feet, would be more than enough to house two of every kind of animal on Earth today. Again, for example, one would not take a full-grown elephant.
But not in an environment where they'd survive.
Well, given that there was an enormous amount of special work going on by God, according to Scripture, with the world being destroyed by flood,
right.
Why could not God have put these animals into some kind of a stasis during the duration of the flood, which the Bible says lasted about a year?
Okay, well, look, you're a believer, and I'm not going to argue with you. It could be. Once you get to that point where you're saying God could have done this or done that, oh, yeah. I mean, God could have done anything, right? Because he's God. So he could have done anything. But, you know, if we're just discussing Old Testament here and what was said, it just doesn't, it just doesn't add up. First time calling a line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Bob from Providence. How you doing?
Okay.
Just a quick comment on last night's show.
Yes, sir.
I thought the doctor made a very revealing statement when he said, if there wasn't a God, we'd be traveling through space at 60,000 miles an hour, a second, with no one in control. And I think that's revealing in the sense that people need something to feel that there's more to their lives than what they see in front of them. And
well, my comment to him, and I was playing devil's advocate a little bit last night, poor choice of words, I guess, and I said, yeah, right, well, isn't that what we've got pretty much? I mean, we're hurtling through space at that aforementioned speed, and it's pretty chaotic here.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, some people just need to believe in something other than what they see right in front of them.
I know that, and for that, religion is a great thing.
Yeah. Listen, I just want to let you know, I've listened to your show for quite a few years, and it's the best thing on radio.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Take care.
Bye.
I would never argue with anybody's faith, you know, never, never, never. It's foolish because people believe what they believe, and you're just going to annoy somebody. You're not going to get through to them. They're not going to change what they believe because it is an article of faith, after all. So you could argue until you're blue in the face, and it wouldn't make any difference. Therefore, it's better not to. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. Good talk to you. This is Jack. I'm in Nashville tonight.
Yes, Jack.
Hey, I was wondering, what is the diameter of the Earth?
The diameter?
Yes.
Seems to me it's 24, 25. That would be the circumference. 24, 25,000 miles. So what, 12,000 miles, yeah. Roughly, something like that?
Okay, because I was just wondering, the guy was talking about the core sample and all.
Right.
You know, I was just wondering what fraction of the Earth he would be down into.
Well, he specifically said where he was, the Gloid Limestone Rift part of the Earth. That's
okay.
Be about 4,300 feet, the Gloid, G-L-O-Y-D, Limestone Rift.
Okay.
Okay, well, and that would make the tooth about 100 million years old. Now, that's coming from inside a core sample. What do you make of that, sir?
Well, that's pretty wild, to say the least. There, one thing he also said was that, you know, the dentist looked at it. They didn't say really how close they were examined, did he?
No, just two dentists certified that it was a human child's tooth.
Well, Art, as usual, there you got me scratching my head here. So,
All right. Scratch away and be safe on the road. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
I wonder when the last time you got in touch with Kathleen Keating, or have you heard from her at all?
Well, let's see. The last show we did with Kathleen was
quite a while.
Probably several months ago, yes.
I was just wondering if there's any way you could maybe get back in touch with her. I'd like to, you know.
Well, you know, as with all my guests, sir,
yeah.
If there's a reason to have her back on, if she has new information, we'll have her back on, that's all.
Well, she was very interested the last time she was on.
Yes.
And I just thought, thanks, Art.
You're very welcome, sir. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
This is Olin in Culver City, California.
Yes, Olin.
This subject of worldwide flood keeps coming up, and I have a theory. I believe that the loss of the carbon dioxide greenhouse gas went into the limestone beds and the coal beds, and that caused the greenhouse effect to break down, and the cloud canopy precipitated for 40 days and 40 nights.
Could be.
While the temperature dropped down from 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. The fern tree forest died. The coastal cities were submerged. The cold-blooded reptiles died. And the Mediterranean Valley backfilled and washed Noah's Ark up onto Mount Ararat.
All the cold-blooded reptiles bit it, huh? You know, my question there then is, how do we have them today?
Well, they're left over.
Cold-blooded reptiles.
They're the small ones that are left over and were able to survive in the sun. But when the greenhouse effect collapsed due to loss of carbon dioxide, that was the end of the Garden of Eden.
Could be. Do you think there was anything before the Garden of Eden?
There appears in the... Woodley Strieber had a guy named Robert Felix who had studied the layers of rocks in geology.
Yes.
And apparently there's been cycles of volcanic and earthquake activity followed by ice ages.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to be in a peak of earthquake and volcanic activity right now. And it seems to have started when the planets were all in alignment on May the 5th, 2000, a couple years ago.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that the number of earthquakes in the Nevada-California region right now is startling and very high, and it's swarming. Boy, there really are a lot of earthquakes there, so we're coming into... a concerning period of time, you know,
well,
Jim Berkland's window.
Yes, I heard on the radio yesterday there was a 5.0 earthquake somewhere in northern Mexico.
Well, you get the feeling that it's just warming up. That was southern Mexico, I believe,
southern.
Chiapas area.
Yeah, I didn't feel it.
They get a lot of them there. But I'm telling you, if you look at the number of quakes in these two states, something is really, really, really moving around down there.
Well, I just heard on the radio news today that the moon is in an elliptical orbit, and it's going to be 20% brighter. And
yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what Jim Berkland also said. Another factor that weighs heavily on the probability of an earthquake. And by the way, the moon, I think, is full tonight and tomorrow. It's doing a lot of tugging right now.
The gravitational attraction is strong because it's so close.
You've got it. It's going to be very interesting to watch for the next about 2 weeks, sir.
Well, anyway, I think the water, the deluge, came from the collapse of the greenhouse cloud canopy when the carbon dioxide ended up in the limestone beds and coal beds.
Got it. All right, I got to run. We're headed toward the top of the hour. Thank you. There's a lot of interesting stuff going on out there right now, isn't there? And coming up next, William Thomas, the man who broke the chemtrail story in the first place. And when there's breaking news, he comes on the air. So he's coming on the air. That must mean there's breaking news on chemtrails coming right up.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Works presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27, 2002.
In a moment, William Thomas will lead you down the chem trail. Right now, though, told you I'd get it up on the website, told you it ran. Got the CNN story link under What's New on my website right now. Go to artbell.com. First item under What's New, click on it. I'll read you a little part of it here. Shows a giant wave. I mean, a really big wave. A 100-foot wave. California, CNN. In an event known as a silent earthquake, get this, folks, a 72-square-mile chunk of the south slope of Hawaii's Kilauea volcano slipped 3.5 inches toward the sea several months ago, leading one scientist to warn of a possible disaster for Pacific Rim nations. That would be y'all in California, Oregon, Washington. The slide documented in the February 28th issue of the journal Nature was measured by Global Positioning System satellites in November 2008. 12 by 6 mile area moved 3.5 inches over a 36-hour period in the first silent earthquake ever recorded of an active volcano. So this 12 by 6 mile chunk that moved extends 5 miles into the Earth's crust. 5 miles, folks. making its mass about equal to that of a quarter-mile-thick Rhode Island-sized object, said researchers. An accompanying article by Nature by geophysicist Stephen M. Ward of the University of California, Santa Cruz, speculates that a landmass that size, should it slide into the Pacific Ocean in one cataclysmic event, could trigger an enormous tsunami that could imperil coastlines as far away as California, Chile, and Australia. Tsunami is a strong, fast-moving wave that can build to 100 feet high or taller. And that's exactly what they, you can read the whole article on the website. They're exactly saying that could occur, a 100-foot tsunami, and it would virtually reach every portion of land affected by the Pacific Ocean. Pretty freaky stuff, huh?
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
William Thomas is a veteran journalist specializing in covert military operations, environmental and health issues. His award-winning career began on the streets of Milwaukee and Chicago in the 60s with front lines coverage of the anti-war and black power movements and a music festival called Woodstock. Woodstock, I remember that. During and immediately after the Gulf War, William Thomas served for 5 months as a member of a three-man environmental emergency response team in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. His book, Bringing the War Home, is highly acclaimed by Gulf War veterans for documenting the causes of Gulf War illness and exposing the secret bio-war in the Gulf. William Thomas has appeared on the CBC in Canada, CNN, and New Zealand National Television. His half-hour video documentary, Echo War, won the 91 Environmental Film Festival Award for Best Documentary Short. But Will Thomas is perhaps best known as the journalist who broke the story on chemtrails right here on this program in January of 1999. He's been here five times. We have followed William Thomas through every single new development during the investigation. And, of course, he has a book now called Chemtrails Confirmed. So he's into all kinds of things now, and he'll have something to say about the September 11th business, but he continues on the track of chemtrails. And so all of our questions tonight, or the majority of them, are going to circle around chemtrails. I'm being absolutely blitzed and bombarded by chemtrail photos, chemtrail stories. Thousands of them within the week already. Thousands and thousands of them. They're heavily going down, particularly in the Northwest right now. Seattle has been getting tons of them. It's really everywhere. Now, what are these things? I said the other night, and I'd like to repeat for Will's benefit, that here I am in the high desert. Very interesting area, not far from Death Valley, known for its sunshine, very, very little rain. You know, we're in the desert here, and low humidity, and blue skies, and great views of the stars, you know, just as deep as you can go at night. It's an incredible area that I live in, and it has unique properties. I mean, during the day, at about this time of year, it's going up into the mid-70s, even touched 80 degrees the other day, and then at night, the temperature plunges in a lot of radiational cooling. That's typical for the high desert. And we are the people that generate the weather systems, many of them, that then proceed eastward to do whatever they're going to do going east. You know, first the Midwest and then the northeast part of the country. And a lot of it generates here. Well, we get a 40 or 50 degree difference, or even more, in temperature from day to night here. Very interesting. Unless there is some cloud cover, and then we hardly get any difference between day and night. It's remarkable how the radiational cooling in the desert has a gigantic effect. Now, I have seen days here in the desert where the chemtrails, what are called chemtrails, appear, the X's, the designs in the air, and then slowly as the day proceeds, it becomes thicker and hazier and weirder and just turns into kind of a, you know, one of those days that most people go, yuck. You know, it's a yucky day, right? And when you produce that here, if in fact it is being produced, then you drastically alter the kind of weather systems that come from this area and move eastward. You drastically change them because you have drastically changed the temperature. So that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, what they've been doing here in the desert. Anyway, here's William Thomas. William, welcome back.
It's a pleasure to be back with you and your listeners, Art.
What do you think about that that thought? I've watched it happen here, William. We generate a lot of the weather that goes east, and if you put clouds up, then we don't fall the 40 or even 50 degrees sometimes that we would normally fall at night, and that really changes the dynamics of what is cooking here and then later moves eastward.
I think you're really onto something there. NASA and NOAA tell us that clouds, of course, are the thermostat of the planet. They regulate temperature. In fact, they make the planet habitable for people like us. And as you just said, when you alter the cloud cover over a region, as normal air traffic has been doing over the last 10 years, and now as chemtrails have been doing to an even greater extent over the past 3 years, you change the heat balance over a region, and you change the weather. And I have not considered this before. You've got me thinking, Art. And, of course, this is going to move from west to east.
That's right. So
across
small,
North America.
Yeah, so a small change here in the kind of system produced produces a big change for what hits the Midwest and then later the East Coast. I mean, that's just the way it works.
Exactly.
Just a thought. Okay, well, I suppose we should take just a moment for those who may be new listeners, and we do have a lot of those, William. And I know it's probably arduous and painful, but the 101 on chemtrails, what the hell is a chemtrail versus what we all thought of as contrails?
Let's start with the contrail that we are all familiar with,
right,
from growing up around airports, watching air traffic. And, of course, we're referring to a condensation trail. Think of your breath exhaled on a cold day. That's a contrail.
Oh, okay.
Effect.
Right.
At high altitude and super cold temperatures, NASA and NOAA again tell us 76 below freezing Fahrenheit and very high humidity, plus 70% or higher humidity. So we're talking 32,000 feet and higher, according to the U.S. Air Force, on average. The very hot, moist engine exhaust coming from aircraft flash freezes, if you like, condenses very quickly in that super cold air into a characteristic pencil-thin trail, again, that we're all used to, that fades very quickly like the wake behind a boat.
Now, there can be some certain weather conditions that will cause a contrail to linger longer than it would normally, right?
That is correct. More importantly, if you have a heavy concentration of jet traffic over heavily trafficked airways, you will get a buildup of artificial cirrus clouds, but these clouds do not come from contrails. They come from the particulates, the dirt in the engine exhaust, and these act as nuclei that attract water vapor that form artificial clouds. It is not correct to say that a concentration of contrails will lead to long-lasting cloud cover. It's the particulates that can lead to the cloud cover. Now, the Air Force and others would like us to believe that contrails can, you know, linger for many hours and cover large areas. And, in fact, it's the particulates in the exhaust in certain conditions that can extend the clouds. But the experts, the scientists, the atmospheric scientists tell us that, on average, condensation trails dissipate within a minute or less.
Right.
And may sometimes last up to 30 minutes.
Right. That has been my experience all my life, until just a few years ago, and then things in my mind, without question, I mean, just simply without question, and if you all think about this, you who are long in the tooth enough, and most of you are, it's not the way it used to be. It has changed. Hence, we have this new thing called chemtrails, and these are characterized by, sometimes people will say, kind of an oily substance, kind of an icky substance, and that the sky slowly begins to change until you've got kind of, like in the song, a hazy shade of winter. I don't know what else to call it. It's just an ucky day, and the entire sky, and then pretty soon it's all cloud cover of this ucky kind, and they're doing something. I mean, something has changed, and that's why we're here talking about it. What the hell are those things that we're calling now chemtrails? You know, somebody suggested to me that, William, that it could be our, quote, overactive imaginations, end quote, that we are essentially imagining all of this, that it's always been this way, and, you know, this is just paranoia running deep.
Could be art. I've never known a photograph to have an imagination, or the miles of videotape that we have.
Yes.
That's very conclusive. Tonight we're going to hear testimony from two scientists who worked on the chemtrails project. We're going to have an update from Deep Sky that I promise is going to blow your mind.
Deep,
and we're going to break this
sky?
Story wide open.
Deep Sky, did you say?
I said Deep Sky. You remember our air traffic control manager on the Northeast Coast.
Yes.
It was on this very radio program that we broke that story some time back now with radio reporter S.T. Brent, who conducted two interviews with a senior air traffic controller on the Northeast Coast. I helped her put the questions together. She conducted very professional interviews. We played those tapes.
Yeah, by the way, we've got a lot of time. This is radio. Do you still have those tapes?
Oh, they're flying around somewhere. Oh, yeah, I'm on the spot.
Okay, you don't have them right there, though.
I'll look during a break.
It would be interesting. If you happen to have them, it would be worth repeating as background, because it's been a long time since we did a show.
Maybe I'll put S.T. Brent on the spot. During the break, I'll pass her phone number to your technician there, Art.
I'm standing by tonight. I'm the only technician, so I'll pick it up during the break. No problem.
Okay, we'll get on that. We have updates from Deep Sky. We have updates from two engineers who are working, as we speak, on the chemtrails project, and we have a lot more tonight.
People have said, look, what about analysis of these things? You and I have talked about this before. The best way to obviously get it would be to be at altitude, actually collecting samples in a chemtrail before any other contamination has been allowed to occur, because these things, you say, do fall to ground. Particulate matter does fall to ground, but of course it's mixed then with whatever happens to be on the ground or whatever it hits, right?
That's right.
So, do we have any altitude samples yet?
No, we don't. And you and I have put out public appeals repeatedly on this show asking for someone with a Learjet, please, because we need a Learjet or a pressurized twin-engine executive-type aircraft to get up. Again, we're talking 30,000 feet. Now, I've chased these things in a Cessna, loaded down with sampling equipment, and we just sat underneath them holding our sampling containers out like a bucket, hoping something would fall into it. That's not scientific. That's not the way to proceed.
No.
So far, Art, we don't have the aircraft and the technology. Now, there is such an aircraft at a university in the United States that does atmospheric sampling, and anyone listening tonight who would like to come up with $20,000, that will buy us a one-day's flight in this aircraft with, of course, no guarantee that we're going to catch these things, but probably, because these people are experts, we'll have a good shot at it.
Well, you've got to wonder if anything would get in the way, but, yeah, you know, okay.
There are flight rules and other air traffic considerations.
Yes, yes.
Well.
So we don't yet have the at-altitude samples. What's the best we've got right now?
The best we have are samples of rainwater falling through heavy chemtrails over a little town called Espanola in Ontario 2 years ago in the summer.
Right.
And the residents there became very concerned because they started getting sick. Their kids were getting sick over a 50-square-mile area, and they were watching these airplanes that they photo-identified as U.S. Air Force tankers. Now, the Air Force denies it, but they have the pictures. And these things were laying down, some grid patterns and these lingering white plumes. Everyone was sick. So they called in the Ministry of Environment, who reluctantly took air samples and did not release the results at a quite a raucous town meeting. So the good citizens undertook their own sample testing, took it to a private lab.
They would not release the results?
No, thank you.
No kidding. I mean, what did they say?
They said everything's fine. Of course, they said everything is fine.
I see. All right.
Don't worry, be happy.
So you had a private sample analyzed?
Private samples, plural, were analyzed at a private lab.
Right.
And the scientific results came back, and they found a very high percentage of quartz, very fine reflective quartz particles.
Quartz.
Some carbon. Used, the Air Force says, in weather modification, and they found aluminum particulates 7 times higher than the provincial maximum health safety standards, quickly revised downwards to 5 times higher. They changed the standards. Nevertheless, aluminum particulates, what was that doing in these samples?
Now you've got quartz, carbon.
A little bit of carbon black.
And carbon black.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that is the stuff they're talking about for weather modification. Carbon black, I'll be damned. And then aluminum at 5 to 7 times higher than what?
The health safety standards of the province of Ontario, Canada.
My goodness gracious.
That's what the residents said. And after they finished saying that, Art, 550 of them signed a petition, and they took it to Ottawa, to Parliament, to the government of this country, and the defense critic, Gordon Earle, stood up and put their petition before Parliament and said the people were complaining, they were being sprayed, they were getting sick, they were experiencing allergic reactions and fatigue and various symptoms. And if this was civil or military, they wanted it stopped.
Okay, and they had been observing chemtrail activity as we just described a few moments ago.
That's right, since the previous March, and now we're into November of 99.
All right, hold tight right there. We're at the bottom of the hour already and just getting started with William Thomas. A lot of surprises coming for you tonight. A lot of updates on chemtrails. This is the one man who's really been doing the on-the-ground research, some of it in the air, and the real digging. Nobody else I know is really doing it. So if you want what information does exist on this subject, you're in the right place. In the nighttime, this is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
George, he knows all the chords. he's strictly rhythm. He doesn't want to make it cry or sing. If an old guitar is all he can afford, when he gets up under the lights, play his thing.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27, 2002.
All right. I think we've made a connection. So we'll catch you up. Some pretty shocking info on chemtrails coming up from a couple of sources next.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Okay, I realize we're about to get an update from William Thomas on the chemtrails, but in order to understand the update, I now understand it's been so long since you've heard this that perhaps the original information would be required once again to get out. So we go to a source that we have. William, you're there, right?
Yes.
Okay, our source is S.T. Brent. That's the only way we're going to identify this source as S.T. Brent. We're going to allow S.T. Brent right now to tell you Basically, who she is and what she does and how she got what she got. And then she's going to play a couple of tapes for you, a tape or two. S.T. Brent, hello there.
Hello, Art. How are you this evening?
I'm just fine. Do you tell us what region you're in, where you are?
Oh, yes, that's not a problem. I actually work at a radio station in New Hampshire, two radio stations, one in the Lakes region and one in the North Country.
Okay.
And I am a broadcast journalist as well as a print journalist, recently.
Okay. All right. So how did you get the information, the tapes that you're about to play for us?
Well, about a year ago, just under a year ago, we happened to be looking out the window and noticed that there were quite a few planes flying overhead, all of them leaving trails that some people would like to call just normal condensation vapor trails behind jets. However, there were so many in the air, and these trails were not dissipating as they normally do. And I had heard the term contrails before, and in fact, know somebody who'd been following the story and writing letters to the editor of the local newspaper that.
Do you mean chemtrails?
Chemtrails, yes.
Okay.
Sorry, chemtrails.
All right.
Yes, but I had heard the term before. I was talking to my partner who was there, and it was a Monday morning, and we went outside, and sure enough, there they were, and not just a few. There were dozens of planes in the air. I had called my office in the Lakes region, the radio station in the Lakes region, and they were also aware of this phenomenon, and they were outside looking up, and several people together had counted approximately 350, 370, I don't remember the exact amount, jets and or contrails slash chemtrails in the sky at one time. So it was, there were lines in the sky all at the same time as there were jets in the sky, and they just kept counting and counting over a span of 6 hours. They were counting jets and lines in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And there were five people involved, including one of the people that is actually my boss, who was out there counting.
Okay.
They're not allowed to smoke in the building. They go outside and smoke, so everybody that was on their break, every time they took a break, they were out there counting jets and lines in the sky. And that told me that there was something wrong.
So what did you do?
I started making phone calls to several airports in our region and just outside of our region and hooked up with several people who all told me that it was just normal air traffic. But I did get to speak with one person on the phone who told me that they were informed. This was a tower. This was an air traffic control tower.
Yes.
They told me that they had been informed that there was a military exercise in the area, and they had to bring in some jets lower than usual and reroute others. They handed off a couple to Boston Center, and which is they handle traffic for, I think it's Manchester Airport and Logan Airport and maybe a couple of other smaller airports in that region.
Right.
And I had several conversations with this person who we've named Deep Sky, Will and I. And then he finally agreed to let me interview him. And that's what the first tape is.
Okay,
interview.
Let's go ahead and let that one go. Let's see what this air traffic controller has to say.
Okay.
Here we go. Maybe.
For the record, you work at a metropolitan area airport in air traffic control. In fact, you are a federal employee. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I am the journalist and radio personality that spoke with you via phone on Monday, March 12, 2001?
Yes.
Well, I would like to reconstruct our conversation of March 12, 2001 as near to the original as possible, with the exceptions of anything that might identify you, and the addition of a few questions that have since arisen in my mind. Is this agreeable to you?
Yes.
At approximately 12:55 p.m. on Monday, March 12, 2001, I called your airport's air traffic control tower, and I spoke directly with you, correct?
Yes.
I gave you my exact location, which you recognized, and informed you of what seemed to me to be an unusual amount of air traffic visible in our area. In fact, I told you that we were witnessing over 30 jets in less than an hour, mostly flying northeast to southwest, over 30,000 feet, did I not?
Yes.
And what do you remember as your answer?
I have relatives in that area, so I knew where you were calling from and what should be visible to you.
Do you remember telling me in that time span that you had 9 jets in or out of your airspace?
Yes.
Did I ask if you could see all the traffic on your screens that we were witnessing?
Yes, and I told you that we own everything to 10,000 feet, that we filter everything else out. We could see it if we chose to, but we don't unless we have something of our own coming in at that altitude.
And what altitude is that?
Over 30,000 feet.
And what do you remember telling me of international air traffic that would be visible to us, if any?
I said that there is an increase of international flights on Monday, and especially in the afternoons, and that you might be seeing international flights coming into Boston or New York.
Did you ask me if I'm usually in this area during the week or just a visitor?
Yes, I thought that you might not be used to the normal amount of air traffic that we have here during the week.
And I told you that I am here every day during the week and sometimes on weekends?
Yes.
So I am used to normal air traffic? Did I insist that this was not normal, that what we were seeing was considerably more air traffic than I can remember seeing here, even in the summer?
Yes.
Didn't I ask how it was that we could see so many jets, and whose air traffic was it if not yours? That is, if you filter out most everything over 10,000 feet?
Yes, and I told you that Boston Center is in Nashua, New Hampshire, also Kennebunk VOR.
Boston Center being another air traffic control center in the Northeast?
Yes, one that handles a good deal of traffic, including international flights.
And what is Kennebunk VOR?
It's a major navigational aid to international air traffic in the Northeast.
At this point, did I mention that my partner was outside the building, still counting several more jets in the air at the same time as we spoke?
Yes.
And what was your answer to that?
I said that that amount of air traffic in such a short span of time was unusual, even though you would see more international air traffic in the afternoon.
Did you mention to me that you had to reroute some air traffic?
Yes.
And why was that?
We had to bring in a couple in lower. That is, we had two from the Northeast that had to come in under their usual altitude. They had to come in at 10,000 feet or under. We had Boston Center take one.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, on March 12, 2001, you had a reason not to filter out everything over 30,000 feet?
Yes.
So you did see some, and I quote, stepped up activity yourself?
Yes.
Didn't you question that?
No.
Well, why not?
Because I had an explanation for that.
Did someone ask you to reroute your traffic?
Yes.
Who?
I can tell you that I received a call telling me what I had to do.
You mean reroute air traffic?
Yes.
You can't tell me who?
No.
Will you tell me why?
You are sure you'll keep my name and where I work out of it?
Well, you work at a major metropolitan airport in the Northeast in air traffic control. You did agree to allow me to say that.
Yes.
And I gave you my word that that is all I will say.
Okay.
So will you tell me why you were told to reroute your air traffic?
I was told that there was a military exercise in the area.
And did you tell me the military exercise combined with your traffic and international traffic is probably why I was seeing stepped-up activity?
Yes.
And you used the phrase stepped-up?
Yes, I probably did.
Did you say, of course, they wouldn't give you any of the particulars and that you don't ask, you just do your job?
Yes, something like that.
Well, since Monday the 12th, have we spoken?
Yes, a couple of times.
To set up this interview?
Yes.
Did I ask if you happened to notice an increase in air traffic on the 12th?
Yes.
And you said?
I did notice a little more than usual, yes.
In the last couple of years, can you recall any other times when you were asked to reroute air traffic?
Just a couple of times, maybe as much as 4 times.
Were you asked to reroute air traffic yesterday or today?
Yes.
Both days?
Well, I'd rather not say both days, but yes, I was.
For the same reason as Monday?
I have to be careful of my job. I have a family to support.
Well, I understand. You have helped me tremendously, and I won't do anything or add anything to the information that you have given me here in this interview today. I will not do anything to compromise the promise of anonymity that I gave you. But will you answer that one last question?
About?
Were you asked to reroute air traffic Tuesday and today for the same reason as Monday, the 12th of March?
Yes.
That's pretty much it for the first tape.
Okay. Do we have another we want to get on?
Yes.
I really want the audience to have what we had before, and I know it's new for many of them. So let's proceed with the second tape, if we can.
Okay.
St. Brent. That is our correspondent here in Rhode Island.
We're ready to go.
Okay, fire away. Here we go.
We've spoken with each other via phone, and we've met before, correct?
Yes.
When I called you to set up this follow-up interview, did you tell me about a trip you made on March 26, 2001 to my area?
Yes.
Would you tell me about that trip, why you made it, and what you observed?
I wanted to see for myself what air traffic would be visible to you on any given Monday from noon to 1 p.m.
And what did you observe?
I saw one jet flying at approximately 31,000 feet, traveling east to southwest. I also saw two smaller aircraft at much lower altitudes.
Did you mention something about traffic that might be visible to me from our local jet port?
Yes.
And how much traffic would be visible to me of the nine jets in or out of that jet port on March 12th?
Possibly one or two of those jets.
Would any international traffic be visible to me?
Yes, but a small amount.
Not the number of jets that I had witnessed on March 12th, 2001?
No.
Which you told me were probably a combination of the military exercise and international traffic?
Yes.
And that was 30-plus jets in 45 minutes from 12:10 p.m. to 12:55 p.m.?
That is what you reported to me, yes.
But you've since proven to yourself that I wouldn't see much international traffic.
Yes.
You also saw a lot of activity on your screen on the 12th. You told me you witnessed stepped-up activity on the 12th, the 20th, and the 21st of March.
Yes.
And this was due to military exercises?
Yes.
Was there considerably more traffic on the 12th than there was on the 20th or the 21st?
Yes.
And would I be able to witness this activity from my location?
Yes.
Is it customary to reroute air traffic for military exercises from your tower? That is, does this occur on a regular basis?
No, not really. Not from my airspace, no.
But it might be from other areas.
That is possible, yes.
Well, is there a reason why you're so worried about your identity? Worried enough to have me alter your voice on the tape?
Yes.
And why is that?
I don't know how much I can tell you that you can record.
You mean this might compromise your identity?
It could.
Oh, I'll let that one go. Did you witness any radar anomalies due to the exercise? That is, was it degraded or maybe enhanced during the operation on March 12th?
Somewhat degraded, yes.
Was radar painting any kind of clutter or cloud in a clear sky?
Yes, there was what you might call a haze.
Would this affect flight safety?
That would depend on the density.
Was safety affected on March 12th, 20th, or 21st, 2001?
Not from my perspective, no.
Did your orders to reroute air traffic come from military personnel?
No.
Did they come from a higher civil authority?
Yes, but I can't tell you who, so please don't ask.
Are you aware of this happening in any other air traffic region?
Yes.
On the same dates?
Yes, and other dates as well.
Many regions?
I wouldn't say many, no.
Some regions?
Yes.
What regions?
Well, one was south of my location.
Will you tell me where?
I'd rather not.
Were you told the type of aircraft that was involved in the military exercise?
Yes.
Were they tanker-type aircraft?
Yes.
Where did they originate?
I really can't disclose that information. It might identify me.
Okay. To your knowledge, did any aircraft cross into Canadian airspace?
That was what was indicated on my equipment, yes.
On March 12th?
Yes.
Do you know or were you told the nature of the operation?
Only after the fact.
When?
On the 22nd.
Of March?
Yes.
Was this a radar experiment?
Not that I was told.
Was this a weather modification experiment?
That approximates what I was subsequently told, yes.
Will you elaborate on that?
I'd rather not, no.
Okay, well, thank you again for agreeing to this interview, and as I promised, I will not disclose your identity for any reason.
And that's pretty much the second tape.
That's some second tape. ST, I want to thank you a million for coming on here so that the audience that's listening tonight could have the background for what we're about to do.
Oh, you are welcome, Art.
You're a sweetheart. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Take care. All right, that's S.T. Brent in
Good night. Thank you.
And, William, those are pretty shocking tapes.
They're also very revealing. We worked very hard together on those questions to get the maximum information with the least exposure to our source. And I'm sure you and many listeners will have picked up on the key question. Did this material enhance or degrade your radar screens? We know that the Air Force has been conducting chemtrail experiments for some years out of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, and we'll come back to that, to enhance radio and radar wave propagation using a barium stearate mixture. So that was the key question. We also know from our lab samples in Espanola, Ontario, and a patent issued to the Hughes Aircraft Corporation in 1994 for the reduction of global warming, calling for spraying of the aluminum oxide that was in fact found in Espanola, that these fine particulates are would degrade radar, not enhance it, but degrade it like miniature chaff or radar jamming material. And as you heard on the tape, yes, there was a haze reported on those radars. So
right.
Now we had a three-way confirmation of what was in the air.
By the way, I'm getting multiple reports, so it must be true, that Fox Television is doing a report on chemtrails. Now, I can't confirm that, but I can tell you that from about 10 different cities here, I'm getting people suddenly reporting to me that their Fox TV is doing some kind of chemtrail report. Were you aware of that?
Yes, except I thought the report had been aired and it was very brief. So that's news that they're coming out with a hopefully more in-depth report. They certainly haven't contacted myself or any researcher that I'm aware of.
But still, very, very interesting that that they're on it at all.
Absolutely.
That may be a foot in the door.
Oh, and yes, and S.T. Brent, who we just heard from, is about to have 2 feet through the window in terms of breaking this. We're very close, Art, to going national with this story, regardless of Fox.
Well, right, but it's good to see Fox on it, and
absolutely.
And I think that that's an indication that there's a big crack opening.
Oh, yes.
And that's liable to widen, and then it's liable to suddenly be very, very mainstream. So the audience may be hearing this just before that point, because I know you've got new information for us tonight. By the way, I had a call the other night, you might want to know, from a man in an interesting place, Buffalo, New York. And he said that he had looked up, they had this really weird snow falling. You know what happened to Buffalo this last winter, right?
Oh, yes.
In a corridor, really weird little corridor. Buffalo got really slammed.
Really?
9 feet of snow. And there was this very fine, weird snow falling. This man looked up. His eye began to burn terribly.
Mm.
Just burned like crazy. He got a sample of this stuff, William, and took it in and got it analyzed after he'd been to his optometrist or whatever, and it came back as having a great deal of, are you ready, carbon black in
it. Oh, boy. Whoa.
I thought you might be interested in that story.
I'm more than interested, yes, and as we said earlier, the Air Force, the U.S. Air Force themselves admits that they use this for weather mod.
And then I've got a couple of really weird stories brewing about the HAARP deal up in Alaska, which is on its way, I guess, to full power, and some indications that their antenna pattern may not be what they thought it was, which would mean that the effects that they thought they were producing might not at all be, in fact, what was produced with what has been done so far. So I'm on to several stories in this area as well. At any rate, you have tonight an update from what we just heard, don't you, from S.T. Brent?
Yes, I do. And again, I commend her for this story and for Deep Sky, who has been on this case for the last several months now. His family is still experiencing health problems, particularly his young ones. I don't want to go any further on identification.
Yeah, hold it right there for now. Deep Sky, anyway, is a great name. A great name for this informant, Deep Sky. Of course, Deep Sky. All right, when we come back, we'll take you from where S.T. Brent left us, the new stuff.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
You just heard an air traffic controller tell you that it was weather modification that was going on. In a moment, William Thomas will take that story forward from that point. Stay right where you are.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM. From February 27th, 2002.
Once again, here is William Thomas. William, take us from where S.T. Brent left off. You have new information tonight, don't you?
Yes, we have information as of about 2 hours ago.
Really? Before airtime? Wow.
Just before airtime, I received a call from S.T. Brent responding to my inquiry on any further updates
right.
from our deep sky source. And, in fact, we have some boggling updates from Mr. Deep Sky.
Really?
This man, of course, had never heard of chemtrails and wasn't familiar with the term when he found himself embroiled in this story. Just doing his job as a senior air traffic control manager.
Here we're talking about the first two interviews. He didn't really know about chemtrails.
No, we never used the term.
Yep, right.
Now, right after Christmas, last Christmas, 2001, Deep Sky started calling around every time his radar was degraded to ask other controllers what was happening with them. Have they seen this on their scopes, and what had they been told? So now we're expanding the investigation. And over the past couple of months, Art, he has called O'Hare Airport, all three airports in New York.
Okay, let's be clear about what degraded means. Now, if there was particulate, very, very small particulate matter in the atmosphere, you would get, for example, with military chaff, when they drop that, you get actual returns, and it looks like a big blotted out white area. What he's talking about is sort of a degraded return, which is going through something that is some sort of reflective material over a wide space, a wide area. So he now began checking with other air traffic controllers in what cities?
He called the, I assume, a senior, but the air traffic controllers at O'Hare in Chicago.
Yes.
All three airports in New York,
uh-huh.
LAX, Los Angeles, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
He called Atlanta. That's the biggest airport in the United States.
Right.
Jacksonville, Florida. Hartsfield Airport in Cleveland, Ohio. San Diego. Dulles in Washington, D.C. And a couple of smaller but very active airports, particularly Westchester County in Armagh, New York, and Manchester in New Hampshire.
Boy, that's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, but he's on the case. His family is sick. His wife is suffering from sudden-onset acute asthma. Never had any symptoms in her life until about a year and a half ago when this whole thing started. So he's on the case.
Right.
But he was doing his job again. He was asking a legitimate question. Are your radar scopes being degraded, and what are you being told? So a series of technical questions to these people. Again, I must stress the word chemtrail was never used. This was simply radar operator to radar operator.
Right.
Sometimes three times or more repeat calls to these people.
Yeah.
He also tried calling Logan in Boston, and he was shut down very quickly there, Art, because, as you know, they've just arrested 15 security people with fake Social Security cards at Logan.
I am aware,
hired before
yes.
September 11th.
Correct, yes, I know.
So every one of those controllers, every one, no exceptions, told him that they have been asked to divert traffic due to military exercises since Christmas of last year.
Not since September 11th, but since Christmas of last year.
Well, when he started making the phone calls, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And they were all being told that these were routine military exercises, something they might expect since the attacks of September 11th. And they were asked to bring in the air traffic lower. This time, Art, they were told, because experiments were being done with radar and, quote, your radars may be degraded.
Oh, no kidding.
They changed the story.
Do you have, you don't have all this on tape, do you?
No. We'll get to that in a second
all
here,
right,
but
all
right. No.
All right, all right. So, yes, since September 11th and of course, Christmas of this last year, I see. So it's easy then to kind of put off and say, well, all of this is a result of what happened September 11th. Of course, it was occurring long, 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 long before September 11th. But
that's right.
But it's easy to put down, I guess, isn't it, just by saying that?
Yes, that was the new smokescreen. But it didn't last very long. So we have all the radars being degraded, and the radar experiments we are familiar with using chemtrails and the barium mixture I mentioned earlier, that enhances radar. So there was something wrong with this story. And the airport controllers at Hartfield in Ohio said they were surprised. They had never seen so much cloudiness on their radar, so much haze. So we have at least one dozen controllers across the United States, coast to coast, who are now very concerned, according to Deep Sky,
really?
By what's going on, because they know as professionals this stuff falls to the ground. They're concerned, they're saying, about flight safety, but more than that, they want to know what the heck is up there.
Have you or ST Brandt endeavored to independently interview any of those controllers?
Yes.
Really?
And I can't say anything further. We don't have anything on tape at this time, and you will be the first to know. But we are working not only on one or two controllers. What we are hoping now is that with a dozen controllers now concerned and involved, and one or more of them aware of H.R. 2977, a bill recently tabled in Congress calling for a ban on something called chemtrails.
Yes, I really want to talk about that. But again, in
yeah.
all of these cities, you've got one dozen air traffic controllers in major cities saying they have a generally degraded radar because of this matter, whatever it is. And they're absolutely confirming this.
Absolutely. Absolutely confirming it. And expressing
concern,
a consensus of concern. Not only for flight safety. Remember, they're bringing in the commercial flights lower, so it's still safe. We want to emphasize that point tonight. It's still safe. Their other concern, they said their major concern, were possible health effects. As one controller said, quote, that's not something you want to be breathing. Now, here's the kicker, Art. Here's the kicker. The other thing they were told by their superiors, who got back to them because they kept pestering them, what is going on here? They said, well, actually, there are some experiments going on in your area, meaning all of these areas, and the word climate came up again.
Again?
More than five air traffic controllers across the United States have been told over the last few months that these experiments involve climate, that they are climate experiments. So the story has changed back.
Wow.
Art, it has changed back at a time when the headlines that I'm reading say the last 3 months, November to January of this year, the warmest, as you're well aware, the warmest ever recorded in the United States.
That's
since
correct.
Records were first taken in 1895.
That is correct.
3 years running.
Yep. I know.
Temperature up around the globe.
I keep seeing the stories actually every 3 months.
There you go.
Hottest 3 months we've had. Yeah, I know. There's no question about that.
There seems to be some real desperation behind these so-called experiments. But for the first time, we have a consensus of concerned controllers. There's a mouthful. If we can get them to stand together, Art, and we are attempting to do this, and come out together, that's national news.
You're treading on very dangerous territory, potentially.
Well, they are, because they have jobs and families, of course.
So you're all treading on dangerous territory. All right, look. Big news, Richard Hoagland came on and said, oh, my God, Representative Kucinich from Ohio, congressman there, actually put chemtrails into his proposed bill banning exotic weapons. And I'll be damned if it wasn't true. Chemtrails were named by name. They were actually named. And then, strangely, without explanation, the bill was suddenly, magically rewritten. Not a word now about chemtrails and many other things like chemtrails. All suddenly just taken out. Now, I'm sure that 5 million people sent you emails when that bill was originally proposed, and I'm sure that you tried to get hold of Representative Kucinich. He, of course, has not extended himself to come on the program here and explain to us why these things were taken out, why chemtrails were removed from this bill. What do you know?
Fascinating that you should say that. Yes, I've been trying repeatedly to get an interview with Congressman Kucinich, and the answer from his press secretary, his handler, is he is too busy. He is a busy man. And I said, well, I'm going to be going on Art Bell. You will have an audience of millions and millions of people. You can explain why chemtrails went into the bill, why it was taken out, and you may be able to get some adherence for a very worthy cause to ban weapons in space. And the word again was, not interested.
No kidding. Not interested.
Well, I'm sorry, that's not a quote. That is not a quote. The word, the quote was, he is very busy and he's
too busy
right now.
Too busy. So they didn't care to explain to you why he put chemtrails in the original bill?
Well, actually, I did get it from another source.
Oh,
a longtime friend of his named Bob Fitrakis. Now, Bob Fitrakis happens to be a reporter for a Columbus Alive newspaper,
right,
in Columbus, Ohio.
Yes.
Mr. Fitrakis broke the story on chemtrails as far as a more mainstream newspaper is concerned.
Right.
A story called Stormy Weather. You may have seen it.
I did.
I interviewed Mr. Fitrakis for background on that story. I was particularly interested in the scientists he interviewed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base working on a chemtrails project. And I was surprised to learn of his friendship with Dennis Kucinich, the congressman there from Ohio, and I asked him what was going on with this bill. And
right,
the response was, chemtrails and all definitions from Section 7 of H.R. 2977 were removed in committee under pressure. That was the quote, under pressure. One can imagine
he said under pressure.
Under pressure. This is
Fitrakis. You must have followed up and said, what pressure, obviously.
I did. Now, Mr. Fitrakis, to my knowledge, Art, is the only reporter who has been able to interview Mr. Kucinich on this matter. And the pressure was not specified. What was made clear is, and we must make this clear tonight, is that all bills before Congress routinely go through committee. All bills. They pass through a series of committees, and they are routinely altered and handled until they are made palatable to Congress people in hopes of passage.
I'm
and
very
course,
well aware of that, yes.
Of course, Mr. Kucinich has an uphill battle trying to pass a bill outlawing space weapons, given the money being thrown at this project. What I was startled to learn, Art, was that Dennis Kucinich, the congressman, heads the Oversight Committee of the Armed Services. This man looks over his term now, his words, the X-Files projects of the U.S. military, including chemtrails.
Well, you've got to imagine a person in such a position would just not lightly insert the word chemtrails in the bill. I mean, in the very first place, it would not lightly be done by somebody in his position, right?
I wondered about that. In fact, I wondered if someone on his staff had simply inserted, and remember, it's a single word, into this bill, and he really perhaps was not up to speed on it. In fact, he is very much up to speed, and we are all indebted to Bob Fedrakis for an interview with Congressman Kucinich published in Columbus Alive as part of an article. And he asked the congressman, why in the world did you put chemtrails into your bill when the Air Force has routinely called this a hoax?
Right.
A direct quote for you.
Right.
From Mr. Kucinich. The truth is there's an entire program in the Department of Defense. This program is called Vision for 2020 that's developing these weapons. Vision for 2020 draws on, wait for this one, Nikola Tesla technology.
Really?
It turns out, Art, that all of Nikola Tesla's papers, his research papers, after his death in 1943, went to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. This comes from his biographer.
Is that where they went? Right.
He went to Wright-Patterson. And if you call Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the Aeronautics Systems Division will say, yep, we did get those papers, but they were destroyed.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, in fact, they weren't destroyed. They were resurrected in something called Vision for 2020, developing his theories into weaponry. This is from Bob Fedrakis, and now we are back to what the Air Force calls full-spectrum dominance of space, land, sea, and air.
As in owning the weather.
Owning the planet, Art. Owning the planet.
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
well,
and now
big plans.
Now we are at HAARP. But one more major point here before we leave HR 2977.
Please.
One of my co-researchers named Suzanne flagged me on this one. At the HR website, HR 2977 is still alive. It still exists. Now, there was a new bill submitted, HR 3616, as you mentioned. All mention of chemtrails is gone. But here's what I didn't know. HR 2977 is still alive. There no amendments have been made to it. It still exists. It's still in a referral process. It's just not active. It's stuck in a drawer somewhere. But it hasn't been rewritten. Chemtrails remains on the record in Congress.
But it's effectively dead, though.
Effectively dead, but could be resurrected, is the point. That's the point. If someone came forward in Congress, they could take it out of that drawer, and it's ready to rock as it sits. In other words, it has to be.
That would take somebody in Congress doing it, though. And we already have seen that Representative Kucinich, as well-intended as he may have been at the beginning, or one of his staff, whoever put that in the bill, took it out, quote, under pressure.
Yes, under pressure. Perhaps we could reverse the pressure, or at least lessen it with a dozen air traffic controllers standing up on national television.
That would have a gigantic effect. But, you know, there are careers and families and real life. You know, and by that I mean, of course, real life. It's life. And if you, it's easy to say, yes, tell us. But if you have a family and you have a life and you have a career and you have a home and you have a mortgage, it's not that easy. Hold on, we're at the bottom of the hour. My guest is William Thomas. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
For so long. Listening to the strangest stories, wondering where it all went wrong for so long. For so long. But hold on, hold on, hold on to what you got.
Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27, 2002.
Certainly does seem to me the events of September 11th could be used to easily cloud any reports at all of unusual activity and foggy radar screens, that sort of thing. It would all easily be blamed on the events of September 11th and subsequent protection in the skies over the United States. I can see how that can clearly be used. The question is whether that's accurate, because it all really began long, long before those events. William Thomas, back in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
All right, let's talk for a second about the events of September 11th. And chemtrails and HAARP. It's my understanding, I've heard some pretty strange stories about what's going on now in Afghanistan itself, and drones and chemtrails, and what are you hearing, William?
That's exactly right. I've been putting up on my website and marveling at all of the pictures of chemtrails coming out of Afghanistan since the bombardment began last October. And, of course, the media is obvious. Spin control on this, publishing the pictures as contrails over Afghanistan in conditions that really don't lend themselves to contrails. And I wondered, certainly they're not doing weather modification over Afghanistan, so it must be the second program that the scientists at Wright-Patterson talked about in Columbus Alive newspaper, and that program was the barium stearate iron program to propagate radar and radio waves over the horizon. And in my conversation with Mr. Fitrakis at the newspaper there, he went on at length telling me about his conversation with the scientists. And a couple of things popped out during the conversation, that the stearate part of the barium stearate equation is a soapy substance. Think about soap. And it, according to the chemical text, the stearate has excellent gelling properties, which should make everyone sit up straight.
Yes, it should.
It leads to a characteristic rainbow effect in the sky, another red flag. It's highly refractive, nearly double the refractive or reflective, if you like, index of water. Higher even than glass, so we have a brilliant white powder, again, very reflective. It can create clouds at extremely low humidity. It can dry up precipitation, and as we mentioned, propagate radar and radio waves over land by inducing a condition called ducting. And basically, the way the scientists explained it, these particular chemtrails they're working on at the Tesla base there at Wright-Patterson, they form an antenna anywhere in the world. That's the exact quote.
Mm.
They're using exotic polymers manufactured right there in Ohio at two locations, tuned to specific frequencies. And this barium stearate, the soapy stearate, helps hold it all together in the air and suspended in the air. And some of this stuff is,
God, this
falling
is so
on Highway I-71.
Yeah, I know exactly what ducting is. I know exactly what ducting is, the phenomena of ducting. You were saying falling on Highway 71?
I-71 in Ohio. And even further than this, getting very wild, I think we're back to Tesla here. By using this mix, they can put something together that the U.S. Navy developed called Radio Frequency Mission Planner, a big name for a computer program coupled with this type of chemtrail that allows pilots and people on the ground tuned into this to see the terrain in three dimensions, 3D on a television screen.
Mm-hmm.
And pilots can actually see visually the atmospheric conditions for propagating radar waves, and they can hide their aircraft under inversion layers, just like a submarine.
Yes.
under the water.
Yes.
Okay. At the end of the conversation, as you probably know, Art, you can interview someone and get amazing information, but it's when you're done and turn the tape recorder off that they come out with something they didn't even realize what they were saying. And Mr. Fitzrakis ended our interview by saying, well, the scientists say that they are using the chemtrails in Afghanistan to fly these drones. Now, the military says, no, we're using satellites to fly the drones, but there's a delay time, there's a lag time using satellites. There's no lag using the chemtrails to fly the drones. They're also using the chemtrails in Afghanistan in conjunction with HAARP, and I know people have been saying this for years. Now we have the proof that they are using this to bounce HAARP over Afghanistan and look for those caves.
All right. Now, let me interject something here. You might find this interesting. I doubt you know about it. I have a friend up in Anchorage who called me 2 days ago, William, and he said, I work for a rocket range up here. And I don't know if I'm supposed to be telling you this or not, probably not, and don't mention my name or I'll lose my job. But the HAARP people have been frantically coming to us any number of times in recent days, begging us to launch some high-altitude barium rockets so that they can figure out what's wrong with their antenna pattern. They're going active, they're going high power, and they're on the way to high power, and they're concerned that their pattern is not what they thought it was as computer modeled, and so they need some high-altitude rockets dispersing a barium very quickly. That's going on right now. I'm waiting for confirmation from some people on this, but I feel pretty confident in the story. And they obviously don't quite have it the way they expected it would be from the antenna farm. You know, the focus of the RF energy is apparently not what they calculated it would be, and so they need some hard evidence of what they're really doing, which scares the hell out of me. Means they don't know what they're doing.
But not only that, as you said at the top of the show, NBC News has recently reported that just a week before the September 11th attacks, the Office of Naval Research announced that it was going to go to full power with HAARP. It's been operating about one quarter power.
That's right.
Well, full power is a billion watts.
Billion watts, yeah. I know. And
now you're telling me it's out of control.
Well, I'm telling you that I have a report from a man who launches these rockets, that they're about to launch a series of rockets so they can figure out what the pattern is, because it is not what they expected. So that would mean, you know, I was talking the other night, it would mean if you're going after the ionosphere with a tight little beam, which is what's supposed to be up there, and it's not a tight little beam, then it's like going in and doing brain surgery with a steak knife.
Yes.
Well, I didn't know if you were aware of that.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah,
I'm following something else. I would hazard to say, equally mind-bending. I'm just fastening my seatbelt here. This came in tonight. We have drones flying around Afghanistan. Are you aware, Art, that those drones are not flown by the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. military? Those drones are operated by the CIA.
Yes. You know, I didn't believe that, but I heard breaking on the news one night was that the CIA had delivered some sort of pilotless weapon or missile to what they thought was Bin Laden's location. And as you know now, there are news stories saying they're trying to get DNA from his family, and they are going to get it, and they're trying to match it to what the CIA hit with their missile. And I said, what? CIA missiles? I didn't know the CIA had missiles, but they do, and they think they might perhaps have hit Bin Laden. So if they've got missiles, I suppose they might have drones, too.
Well, they have them in combination. The missile is a Hellfire missile. The Israelis have been firing it from helicopters at known terrorists on the West Bank with some success. They're mounting these Hellfires, two of them, on each one of these drones. We're talking an aircraft with something like a 40-foot wingspan, about 28 feet long, top speed 138 miles per hour, altitude, 26,000 feet.
Oh.
Loiter time, 29 hours.
Wow.
These things can hang out, and you just change the remote crew, send them out for coffee and a rest, and these things are just, they're invisible, they're silent at altitude, and they fire Hellfire missiles, and they've been killing people in Afghanistan since before September 11th, as a matter of fact.
That's incredible. It just silently waits up there for half a day, if necessary, like a bullet waiting.
That's right. And hitting targets that cannot be identified positively at that range. But if they're driving SUVs in the desert and they're Arab people, there's not a whole lot of them in Afghanistan. They're wearing robes. They're very tall, as Osama bin Laden is some 6'4", I believe, and others, obviously, lieutenants are also tall. They're letting fly, and they've killed at least five people of the legitimate government of Afghanistan. They've killed three villagers out hunting scrap metal. But a few weeks ago, they targeted, as you're well aware, seven people around an SUV, and they were hoping to have gotten Osama bin Laden. Now, a local in the area said no, he wasn't among that group, and as you say, we're waiting for the DNA. And here's the kicker, Art. If the DNA comes back positive, and it turns out that Osama bin Laden has in fact been killed by a robot, wait for this one, chemtrails, it looks like chemtrails will have played a major part in that hit by allowing the drone to be flown to fire the missile.
Pretty incredible stuff.
I never dreamed, after 3 years of chemtrails, turning my attention to the events around September 11th, that these stories could possibly come together. They certainly have come together in terms of HAARP looking for the caves in Afghanistan, flying the drones in Afghanistan, and perhaps the death of Osama bin Laden.
Well, I guess we'll find out. I have been getting, gosh, Will, hundreds of emails from the Pacific Northwest, specifically, for example, the Seattle area.
Yes.
Of extremely heavy chemtrail activity. How about you?
Right over my head. I don't need the emails. I'm getting them as you are, but we have been getting hammered here.
How long? When did it? Where exactly are you? I forget.
I'm on the west coast of Canada. I'm on a little island just off of Vancouver Island.
Okay, so you're near Seattle.
I'm near enough to Seattle and Vancouver, Canada, which is another hot spot similar to Seattle. But, yes, I'm within ferry boat range of Seattle.
Okay. All right. So you don't need the emails to know it's happening to you.
No. And this is very, very telling. We're back to September 11th again. Remember, Art, we've been covering this story, you and I, for some 3 years, and we've taken a lot of flack for it. We've been told over and over again these are airliners. And ironically, it took, at least it looks like it took, Osama bin Laden and those horrific events of September 11th to finally put that away forever, because on September 11th, I was out watching chemtrails over Vancouver Island. I was receiving emails from Vancouver, Chicago, Columbus, Ohio, heavy chemtrail activity. And then Lori Kramer, who's been heading the chemtrail tracking USA out of Houston, Texas, for at least that long now, put together reports from Indianapolis, Lexington, Kentucky, Southern Illinois, Baltimore, Maryland, Fort Wayne, Indiana, her own home, Houston, Texas, Detroit, Eugene, Oregon, all over the country. Remember, Art, September 12th, all airliners were grounded.
That is correct.
So that's another thing that September 11th did, another connection, if you like, with chemtrails. It proved conclusively that these are military. Now, Art, you mentioned earlier the masking effect of being told, well, these are military flights after all, and that's what's going on. Check this out. September 12th, all airliners are grounded. We have Dr. Patrick Minnis, a name you probably have heard of. Many of your listeners have.
We're suddenly getting a crackling, weird noise on our phone line. I'll reestablish the connection at the top of the hour, but it's getting weird.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let's get this one out. Research scientist, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, Langley Research Center in Virginia, Art. They decided that on September 12th, let's do a contrail monitoring exercise. The airliners are grounded. Listen to this. Dr. Minnis says only...
Where'd he go? William? Uh-huh. Interesting. Let me see if I can get William Thomas back. Oh, brother. Well, gee whiz, folks. Let's try again. A telephone number is a telephone number, right? I'll tell you, the timing of some things is pretty strange. We'll reestablish the connection here. Hear the crackling in that? We're going to have to try again here. Let me try this one more time. This is a little weird. Let's see. Sounded like some important information was about to be told. Here we go again.
Good evening.
Oh, I don't know what happened. I've still got the crackling on the line, but at least we're together. Pick up where you left off. Let's try it again.
Okay, 9 military flights, Ohio to Virginia, September 12th. Now, Dr. Minnis, who has been a... how can we be kind here? Disinformation specialist in all of this. He's really come after the chemtrail.
What does he say? What does he say?
He says, well, these are normal contrails, and we did this study on September 12th because all the airliners were grounded. We sent up 9 military flights, and we found contrails fanning out over 5 hours to form cirrus clouds covering over 24,000 square miles. Pretty convincing on the face of it. My take, Art, is, well, you sent up 9 military flights, they were spraying particulates, and you managed to create a cloud cover over 24,000 miles. So Dr. Minnis may have let something out of the bag here, because if this is true, we can say that 9 Air Force tanker planes, presumably, just 9 of them, can blanket our skies over an area of 24,000 square miles in just 5 hours. And I can hear a lot of people nodding.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say. You know, William, have you ever wondered, with the valid defense reasons that we might have for doing some of what we're doing, and a lot of them I would consider to be perfectly valid. You know, if the CIA can kill bin Laden with a missile, then more power to him as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Blow his ass from here to Sunday. But
make sure it's his ass.
Well, yeah, or his lieutenants or whatever, you know, the people responsible for this. I'm comfortable with that. But William.
Yes.
The other aspect, the weather control, the possible involvement of HAARP with the particulate matter being put into the atmosphere, all the rest of that, How do you feel about people's right to pry this this information loose, to get this public, to make it public? Could there be a compelling enough reason, perhaps, not to make whatever in the hell this is public? If it's weather modification because of something they know, if it's weather modification because we're facing some catastrophic situation, or because it's weather wars, because we're in a war with who knows who, China or Russia, whoever else is working on all of this, could there be a compelling enough reason not to pry this all open?
I hear you, Art, and I would reply that because it affects the entire planet in ways we cannot know, yes, we have every right to know, and I'm fully aware that everything has changed since September 11th, but Art, this program has been going on for years before September 11th, and the very convenient imposition of regulations, national security, and draconian measures. This operation's been going on for years, and if it is to somehow ameliorate global warming, and this is a good thing, then you would think the government would come out and say, we're doing a good thing.
You would think so, but there's a lot of buts there. Hold on. We're going to do this for the people in Seattle, up near you.
Bluest skies you've ever seen are in Seattle.
That's the way it was. Remember?
And the hills, the greenest green in Seattle.
Now we have chemtrails.
Like a beautiful child growing up, free and wild, full of hopes and full of fears, full of laughter, full of tears, full of dreams to last the years in Seattle.
We'll be right back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
It's the hardest thing a boy can ever do. And you pray that you will find someone warm and sweet and kind, but you're not sure what.
Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
Tell me sweet little lies. I wonder if that's what's going on. I wonder if they're sweet little lies. Or are we all having some sort of mass hallucinogenic experience? Some mass delusion, which is what the detractors of this whole chemtrail thing say. It's always been this way. This is ridiculous. These things have always been the same. This is nothing different, nothing unusual. So, could they be right? Could that really be true? Or could they all be sweet little lies? Perhaps for what they consider to be a very good reason. I don't know. That's what we're chasing anyway.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
All right, William, we're back on the air. I do want to try and get to the phones this hour. So is there anything else that you really, really, really feel important to get out tonight before we do that?
Yes, very quickly. I want to emphasize that whatever the motives here, the weather modification aspects, the climate control aspects of the chemtrails obviously are not working. This is not a good idea. It is not helpful, as we discussed, to change the heat balance, change the weather. I feel very strongly that this program is really all about an oil president who, as you know, almost his entire cabinet has been directly connected with the oil industry. This is all about petroleum pollution and profits as usual in the face of global warming. And as you're well aware, increasingly extreme weather events going to places perhaps that you wrote about in the coming global superstorm.
Right.
This is a man who, just after he took office, his EPA administrator came out and said, the president has said global climate change is the greatest environmental challenge we face. And then he ripped up the Kyoto Accords. And I have to wonder if someone took him outside and said, we have a solution. We have a techno fix, and we can carry on down the road. But let's quickly go to Ken Caldera. This is a scientist at Lawrence Livermore Labs who did the actual computer model simulations for Edward Teller's Sky Shield / chemtrail program. And Ken Caldera told Columbus Alive, he said, you know, we did the study just to show that this shouldn't be done. And he said, because of negative health effects. Now, that was a new one on me. Earlier,
right.
Mr. Caldera had warned that the program could destroy the ozone layer. Now he's talking negative health effects. This is really a dumb idea.
You're pretty sure of that. I mean, is it possible that we don't understand the magnitude of the threat? I'm trying to look at all aspects of this. I mean, the magnitude of the threat that they know about, if all of this is true, might justify the incredible thing they might be doing.
Certainly, we can say the threat is dire. We can say it is extreme. The poles are melting. Weather is changing. The insurance companies of this planet, who are bigger than big oil, bigger even than the international trade in arms, are up in arms and saying publicly, we are going broke. And if we go bankrupt, the banks that back us, Wall Street, the money markets, the whole thing collapses. So that's serious from the financial aspect, certainly from a planetary aspect on our fragile spaceship here. Yes, it's an emergency, but as Ken Caldera himself said, and many others, the thing to do is to cut back on carbon burning and get on with the alternative fuels and alternative lifestyles that would let us be all better off. The techno fixes seem to get us in worse and worse trouble. I'm not arguing there isn't a grave problem, a danger. I've been covering the environment for more than 10 years, and I'm very up to speed on where we are, and I'm sure governments do not want to tell the public how serious the situation
sure
is, but
don't.
It's leaking through the media. It's right in our faces every day with the kind of weird temperatures and weather we're all experiencing.
Well, again, let me go back to the severe skeptics and critics and what they say. They say mass hallucination, mass deep paranoia, people just piling on, that nothing has changed from the way it always was.
Ooh.
I mean, that is what they say. I mean, that's what the big critics say, that you're just delusional.
Mostly the big corporate critics with a stake in the status quo, but the delusion does not extend certainly to the far north of this country, where the Innu, who've been there for some 12,000 years, are looking for words art for mosquito and robin, which have shown up in the far north. They've never seen them before. The poles are melting. As we've just said, we've had the warmest temperatures ever recorded in modern times, since the 1800s.
There's a mysterious rash that's appearing on people, students, and now regular adults, geographically scattered all around the country. Medical science thus far has no explanation for it at all. again, I suppose people will say it's mass hysteria of some sort. You know, the reports are generating more of it, and people are psychologically producing this rash. That's what they're going to say. But, you know, there are others out there who think there might be some sort of connection to the kind of thing you're talking about tonight. Have you heard those reports?
I wasn't aware. It sounds like an epidemic. I was aware of the schools.
Yes.
Not the extent of it.
Oh, my, trust me.
Oh, I do. Off the top, I would guess sounds like some kind of fungal infection. I would link it to these ultra-warm temperatures. Certainly rashes have been connected with chemtrails, but this time I would not lay this to chemtrails. I would look more toward the warming temperatures.
It could be anything. I have no idea whether it's connected. I'm just tracking it as a story. All right, I want to go to the phone lines and let some people ask questions. Wildcard line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
I was curious. Do you think there's a connection between HARP and what you're describing is like a floating radiogenic grid used and created by these chemicals? Do you think HARP can be used to charge this grid?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by...
Well, he's just asking, in other words, could HARP be interactive with these floating chemicals? That's really the question. He's saying, could HARP be used to, in some way, activate these chemicals once they're placed?
Oh, absolutely. And I would emphasize, we've been talking for some 3 years now, I think, about the laws of unintended effects.
Yeah.
HARP is bad enough, but quickly now, we have... The biggest, you want to win a bar bet, ask someone what is the biggest single pollutant on planet Earth, and the answer is electromagnetic pollution on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have electronic smog over all of our cities and most of our communities.
If you could see it, you'd know.
Yes, and I can only say that the chemtrails over the same cities and communities must be interacting with the electronic smog from all of our transmitters and radars and microwaves and cell phone towers in ways, again, not intended by the designers of any of these systems and in ways that are very detrimental to human health. Now add HARP to that, add military weaponry we don't even know about to that, and we have a very serious situation, again, unintended.
Well, when you're talking about complex systems... Our weather is one of the most complex system you can imagine. Just sort of defines chaos theory more or less, doesn't
Absolutely.
It? Absolutely. Uh-huh. So when you begin applying specific technologies to attempting to control it or change it, you really are you're rolling the dice
right? Absolutely rolling the dice and. To the threshold of chaotic effects where things spin out of control, as the chaos people tell us, and you have unpredictable effects, a cascade of effects through the entire system.
So I can only figure that for those who might be doing this, if it's all real and we're not all delusional, the bet on the table to cause these dice to be rolled must be monstrous.
I concur, and that is the reason for the silence.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning.
Morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
It's a pleasure. I'm calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana, WOWO.
Yes, sir.
These aren't sweet little lies, Art. I believe they're huge lies.
Yeah, they may be.
It takes me back to Vietnam when they were dropping Agent Orange. I was a crew chief on a Huey.
Oh, you were?
Yes. And... at briefings every morning, they would let us know the area we were flying in. If it was, Agent Orange was being dropped, they would tell us to take our gas mask. It was supposed to be harmless, but they didn't want us breathing it. And I remember the oily feeling and stuff like that. And
well, when somebody tells you it's harmless, but, yo, here's this gas mask, wear it, right away you should be... alerted.
Exactly, but, you know, the military, you do what you're told.
And, that's right.
And then now years, you know, it was years, you know, until they proved that the Agent Orange, you know, did cause, numerous problems. And, like, a rash was one of the first things.
I have no way of obviously of connecting these stories yet, sir. I just simply pointed it out, but.
You know, like I'm saying, you know, you mentioned that from the chemtrails, people, you know, around the world are having, the first signs are rashes, and it's. I just think it's, you know, a huge lie, and the government knows exactly what's going on.
Well, all right, that's an opinion, and I guess you share that, Will, don't you?
Oh, one more lie among many, and we can look to September 11th for a whole pack of lies. All right, I think it's all going to be coming out very soon. I'm very optimistic that this whole, everything is about to fall down, all of these lies, around September 11th, around the chemtrails. Ken Caldera, by the way, Art, says himself that he believes, that he says there's rumors going around the scientific community that the U.S. government will come out this spring with an admission on chemtrails.
Really?
And Caldera calls that political suicide. But the pressure's building.
Well, I guess it would depend on the explanation. Again, if we're going to roll these dice, it must be a giant bet, which means something really, really, really big and concerning is, you know, if it was that big, I mean, just like with UFOs and with all sorts of things, that there's a general feeling that the general population couldn't really stand, nor could our economy, a giant blow of really bad news, you know, about the weather or about the ionosphere or about the ozone layer or something gigantic. We're just not ready for another blow. I mean, look what happened was September 11th. It slammed our economy into the ground.
It did that, Art. It also gave us an incredible reality check, and at least some of us are starting to examine our attitudes and our actions around the world, and that's a good thing at a terrible price. And better to get the reality check from the news, absorb the blow, and have a little bit of time left to do something about it than to get the reality check from Mother Nature herself with no time left.
I'm with you there, west of the Rockies. You're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Lee in Phoenix.
Yes.
And I wanted to give you my opinion of what our government is doing to us.
Okay.
I have noticed the chemtrail spraying in Phoenix for the last 3 years always occurs on the days that we have this forecast for our high pollution days. So I figured, okay, it's a government experiment. They're trying to do something to cut down on the air pollution. And I think that it's an experiment that's gone wrong, and what they have created here, at least in Arizona, we're having a drought. We've had a drought for 3 years. Flagstaff, which is supposed to have snow, and they have ski resorts, those people are going broke. And I think that their consequence is that they've destroyed our natural weather pattern. And I think if the truth be known, I think people could probably sue over this, at least the people who are losing their businesses because there's no longer any snow and Flagstaff.
Ma'am, you're right on the mark. You're right on the mark there. The National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, reminds us that if you put a little bit of particulate, such as the silver iodide that's been used in cloud seeding since the 40s, into the air, the available moisture will accrete around it and you will have rain. No mystery there. But they said if you pour tons and tons and megatons of particulates into the atmosphere, and these tankers hold 150,000 to 300,000 pounds of material per aircraft, they said if you put that kind of material into the air, it will attract all the moisture and take it out of the air, and you will have drought.
Well, that's what we have here in Arizona. I don't know about the other states.
Well, you're in a very similar climate to that which I am here. You're probably 10 degrees on average above us in Phoenix. But, ma'am, confirm what I'm saying. Normally here in the desert, it's very warm, even in the winter, certainly most of the months of the year, very warm during the day. But then, of course, in the city, and if you're really in the middle of Phoenix, it might not cool down as much at night because of the amount of concrete. But out here where I am, with radiational cooling, you get, oh my gosh, 30, 40, 50 degrees difference between many days and many, many nights, right?
Well, it hasn't been cooling down here lately in Phoenix. It's been warm in the evening.
I know. But what I'm saying is, That would be the normal condition with a lot of radiational cooling at night, right?
Right.
And if you don't get that radiational cooling at night, then the weather patterns that are generated over your area and my area, the whole southwest part of the country, are going to be radically altered. You know, if there's a lot of cloud cover or a smoggy, dirty atmosphere, you're just not going to get that much radiational cooling, and therefore the weather patterns that are generated over our area and then move east are going to be radically altered, yes?
Yes, and that's what's happened. Their experiment has failed. They were trying to destroy air pollution, and they've destroyed our natural weather pattern, and they're causing drought.
Well, I'm not certain of the air pollution angle for this reason. The International Panel on Climate Change, which looked at Teller's program, looked at this sky shield and said, yeah, I guess it could work if you go all the way. And all the way is 10 million tons of particulates sprayed into the atmosphere. And by any definition I know of, that is air pollution on a scale that's off the scale.
Mm-hmm. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning.
Good morning, and hello, William.
Hello.
Hi, this is Bob from Los Angeles. Yes, I'm quite aware of the military. I used to do some contract work for the military a while back, and I know that the things that they're using, such as Dynogen, or that.
I am.
I'm not.
Oh, it wipes out storms.
Dynogel?
Dynogel.
How do you spell that?
D-Y-N-O gel. You can put it on the internet.
All right. Oh, you'll find it on the internet.
Yes. Yeah, what they do is it's for cloud busting, for looking through clouds to see when they're looking Afghanistan, looking with the image satellites to an area and there's clouds.
Were you actually involved in disbursement of that material?
No, I've known pilots that use this stuff. What it does is it breaks up clouds and it turns it into a gel form and it falls down to the ground.
All right. hold on through the bottom of the hour. I want to hold you over, all right?
Yes, okay.
All right, stay right where you are. And of course, William Thomas, stay where you are. We'll be right back.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
Tell me what you say. Don't you love her madly? Wanna meet her daddy? Don't you love her face? Don't you love her as she's walking out the door? Like she did 1,000 times before. Don't you love her as she's walking out the door? All your love, all your love.
Take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Good morning. William Thomas is my guest. We're talking about chemtrails, getting the latest on chemtrails. He says as many as 12 major city air traffic controllers are getting close to the point where they're ready to come forward. That would break this whole thing totally wide open.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 27th, 2002.
Once again, way up north we go to William Thomas. Can't tell you how I appreciate your being here tonight, William.
Thank you, Art.
All right. Lots of people obviously want to speak to you. Is there a way to contact you, William? Do you have a website information, email information, what have you?
Yes, thank you. The quickest way, of course, people can link to me through your website. They can also go to Lifeboat News, one word, lifeboatnews.com.
Okay.
And link to me that way. They will find my email address throughout my website. It is, I'll take a deep breath.
Sure.
Will Thomas, WILLTHOMAS at TELUS, that's our phone company, TELUS.net. And for people without internet access who would like to order my book on chemtrails, if you permit me, Art, or September 11th, my new book, All Fall Down, that toll-free number, 1-866-839-8273.
Wait a minute, 839-8273?
Correct, and please, okay. West Coast Business Hours for that number.
Yeah, okay, that's 1-866-839-8273. 8273?
That is correct.
Normal West Coast biz hours, huh?
Yeah.
9 to 5.
I've got some good people who are standing by that number. They're not getting paid for it, so they say, please, business hours. Both September 11th and the Chemtrails books are brand new. They're February books, both of them.
All right, I want to bring the caller back on. Caller, you're back on with Will Thomas. Hi.
Hi, how you doing? On the break card, did you look up DinoGel on the Internet?
No, but I got about a million... people fast blasting me. I've got that up on the computer right now with the URL, so I'll be looking at it. What? So tell me about it, Dino Gel.
Well, basically what it's used is, like I said, to disperse clouds because our imaging capabilities aren't good enough to penetrate clouds that give high resolution. We have things that go through the clouds. It's the gamma ray frequency that only shows an outline of the object.
Yes.
But the best way is our optical systems. When we blow it, when we use Dino Gel in the clouds, what it does is eliminate the clouds from the sky, and what happens, it falls to the ground. There's been experiments here in the U.S. with the chemical. You've seen it on some news channels. They say there's like gelatin on the ground, looks like green jello.
Oh, yes, lots and lots of reports like that, yes.
Yeah, that's Dino Gel testing. And what they do, it totally eliminates the clouds, so our optical sensors in orbiting 22,300 miles up could actually see identify a tank that's not an inflatable tank rather than a solid object.
My. We really are toying with Mother Nature. All right, caller, thank you. You were aware of this, William?
Yes, and I'm struck here by the ability to make a cloud cover on a blue sky day, a process the Air Force calls aerial obscuration, or eliminate clouds. This is hubris on a scale that just leaves me flabbergasted.
Well, with all the laws of unintended consequences and the chaos theory that would apply to our weather, to toy with that is just really nutty. It's a big bet. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Good evening, Art. Mr. Thomas.
You're going to have to speak up a little, sir. Where are you?
This is Flip in Jacksonville, 690 WOKV.
Okay.
Real quick question. I was wondering, what did the, if any, did the chemtrails have to do with the problems that the weather forecaster up in Salt Lake City.
Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah, the weather forecaster have to do with the bounce back on the weather forecaster have with.
Let me bring that up to Will. I don't know if you know about that story or not, Will, but
No, Art, I was just marveling at the exquisite television shots of the chemtrails over the ski jumps and the snowboarding hills.
Yes, but let me tell you, there was a weather forecaster on television in Salt Lake City. Now, this was occurring during the Olympics, of course.
Yep.
And he was saying that he was getting all kinds of returns on his radar that he could not explain. He attributed it, of course, to military activity, probably some sort of security measure being taken by the military. But really, you know, he would point at it, entire areas just returning like it was something almost solid. They were not quite solid, but he was puzzling at it. And this was just, you know, during the Olympics, last few days. And you might want to contact some people in Salt Lake City and make some inquiries about
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, it was a fairly big story. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Hi, this is Ethan in Salt Lake City.
Yes, sir.
I know we got blanketed with something.
Okay, did you happen to see any of the weather forecaster guys? That
it was really bizarre, because our five-day outlook, he did this whole thing to project it all the way out to the closing ceremonies.
You're right.
And nothing but blue skies. Then last 2 days, out of nowhere, this, like, small storm comes out. And the really bizarre part is it only hit certain parts of the valley.
Well, it wasn't so small. I tell you, I saw some of the events with snow so thick you couldn't see the people.
It hit a lot of the venues, but as for the valley itself, it was not really that substantial. But it was really interesting to see him miffed over it.
He was very puzzled, wasn't he, about the...
Have either of you read the book The Stand?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I just remember in that book how they had that, uh-oh, and the government kept saying, you know, oh, we have nothing to do with it. I think that sooner or later this uh-oh that they're doing is going to come out. I happen to have family that works at the airport here in Salt Lake.
Oh.
And they've come down with all sorts of different stuff, you know, colds that they can't get rid of for months. Their coworkers are getting sick. Just a lot of illness going around people who work at the airport. And I'm just, one question is there a rise in maybe cancer or some other diseases in airport or people who work with airplanes? And second, after they make this snow, we have to drink the water. you know, the snow that they just made, that's going to go into our reservoirs and we're going to drink it. What's going to happen to us when we do that?
He raises a really good point. In other words, if there is a chemical that's causing precipitation or precipitating precipitation, that would be hard to say even once, much less three times, precipitating precipitation, then indeed it comes down with it and, as this caller points out, enters the water sources, right?
Yes. Now, I've checked into this somewhat, Art, and the scientists and medical people tell me that aluminum oxide is inert. It's like sand. It's not toxic in itself. If it hit your water supply, they tell me it would sink to the bottom anyway and really not affect anything that's not toxic.
Right.
To which I respond, yes, but it is 10 microns, according to the patent, which the EPA calls extremely hazardous to human lungs and tissue. And then, of course, we have barium, which is toxic at fairly low concentrations. And I don't know if that settles out or just where the barium goes. And then, of course, we have, quote, unknown substances in these various experiments. And I'm getting red flags listening to your caller. I'm recalling now, a couple of years ago, now about a year and a half ago, there were publicly announced studies over Salt Lake City spreading aerosols through the air, they said, to check the wind patterns, because they're very, I guess they're trapped over the city. Often there are inversions, and they wanted to see if bad people could spread bad things over that city, and they conducted experiments. The point being, Art, the military knows exactly the atmospheric and air conditions over Salt Lake City. They mapped it out a year and a half ago.
How close might we be to having as many as a dozen air traffic controllers coming forward?
I'm not certain. I'm working with ST Brent at this time, and our consensus together is that if they all come together, they will not all get fired. And again, they could come out legitimately and say, you know, as technicians, as air traffic controllers, we don't know anything about chemtrails.
Right.
We are not making any allegations. We are not attacking the government. We are simply concerned in doing our jobs
that we need to know, you know, what is going on. And I agree with you. It's a long shot in the sense of what they have to lose, and we're being very careful of their identities. But instead of one now, we have 10 to a dozen and probably more coming on board as this circulates. And I'm hoping that they'll find courage together and step forward, and that would be instant national news.
It certainly would. First-time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mr. Bill. And Mr. Thomas, fascinating show. I'm calling from Rapid City, South Dakota.
Okay.
Home of Mount Rushmore.
Yes.
I was a former Nevadan. Mr. Thomas, let me ask you a question. Here in the state of South Dakota, we are really going through a terrible drought in the last 2 or 3 years. Wildfires spreading in the Black Hills.
Yes.
And we've had some severe drought even in the agriculture, you know, the Midwest part of the state.
Yes.
I was going to ask you a 360-degree question. I hope it don't sound ridiculous. But could chemtrails be beneficial, let's say, down the line there was a severe drought? Could they use that like it's like for cloud seeding? And I'll just hang up and listen to your response.
All right.
It's a good question. Cloud seeding itself may be helpful in certain conditions. All, at least 48 states in the union have cloud seeding programs. They are licensed. They've been ongoing for years. In fact, it's done around the world. It's a big business to fill reservoirs. Again, we're talking silver iodide, relatively very small amounts in specific locations. Seems to work very well if the atmospheric conditions are right. Chemtrails, on the other hand, overwhelm the existing moisture in the atmosphere, according to atmospheric scientists, and they will actually absorb it. Think of a sponge, and chemtrails will create or exacerbate existing drought conditions. The last thing you want in a drought condition is to spray chemtrails.
All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Thanks, Art. This is Gary from San Diego, part
sure.
of Path 10 Research Foundation. I've been listening to you here on KOGO 600 AM. And last time I think I spoke to you is when you had Robert Morning Sky on when he was going to do that fancy dance on the pyramid.
Well, you need to call a little more frequently than that.
Sure. But I've been listening to you ever since. Evening, Will. Interesting. Maybe you might want to consider getting together with Mr. Lear and the Disclosure Project with this.
Oh, Dr. Stephen Greer?
Yes.
I spent a fascinating day with Dr. Greer in Vancouver not too long ago. Looked at his material, his videotape, and in turn briefed him on chemtrails. We had a very good exchange, and I was fascinated as a journalist by the impeccable research he has done and the military witnesses who have come forward.
Well, then you both might want to know that as of today, earlier today, I received a request for airtime from Dr. Greer on the show. In fact, 2 slots of airtime. He's got some news coming up.
Maybe we could get both of them on the air at the same time, Art.
Well,
and
could
why isn't the EPA getting involved?
The EPA?
Yes.
Oh, they've ducked this at every opportunity. They have been sent samples, registered mail. I believe that was Clifford Carnicum down in Santa Fe, the Sky Watchers. Registered mail, samples, give us the results, no reply. The EPA says talk to the FAA. The FAA says talk to the Air Force. The Air Force says talk to the EPA, and around we go.
Uh-huh. This is what I've been hearing from Bill Hamilton. He's also a research associate of mine, and it's an interesting thing that they're just keeping a lid on all this stuff. And, I mean, I've sent photographs, including recordings from your program, Art, about on this subject, and taken it, marched it right into the studios at KMFB Channel 8 here in San Diego.
Right.
And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And yet people sit there and say, there's no conspiracy, you know, the media doesn't have...
I know.
You know, I know there's good people
there
in the
media
that are trying to do something about it, like yourself and others.
Listen to me, sir. There are cracks beginning to form. Fox News apparently is just beginning to report on chemtrails. There are cracks that are beginning to form, so don't give up the ship. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hello, this is Sherry from Southfield, Michigan. Art, many times I tried to get through. I had so many things I had to talk to you about in the future. And your guest... I'd like to know if you've ever heard of a book called The Taking of America, 1, 2, 3. The author, Richard Sprague, says that when George Bush, the president, was in office a long time ago, he put 25 CIA representatives at the head of the media and that they would be controlling what we find out. And this Richard Sprague was working with Jimmy Carter when he was president. He wasn't just a fly-by-night person. I've never heard of him since. I don't know if he died or if they tried to get rid of him. But I think we need to know more about this because I think this is why we get things only certain things at a time, like we were focusing so much about O.J. and Monica Lewinsky, and we didn't find out about all these important things that are going on. Do you agree?
You're right on the mark. In my latest book, All Fall Down, The Politics of Terror and Mass Persuasion, emphasize the mass persuasion, I go into the media. I've been in media for 30 years now. I talk about the CIA in the media. I name names, and I give full references. You are absolutely on the mark. And, of course, now, Art, we have this disinformation agency that's been in the news recently.
Yeah,
and we are going to lie to the American public. No, we're not going to lie to
actually,
the American public.
Actually, they admit it, finally.
Yeah.
They really admit it. This is disinformation.
Yeah. But check out that book for the actual names of the people in these news organizations. It's absolutely true what you're saying.
Okay. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Gentlemen, this is a great subject because I look in the sky, too. I see everything you're talking about. Many questions, but I'll just ask one.
Okay.
I can recall, Art, when you had Joyce Riley on, as courageous she is about the Gulf War syndrome, just the other day in the newspaper I noticed that this fellow came forward along with others. They said that they now approve over 600,000 people suffer from the Gulf War syndrome. And you have reported this to people for a long time. It finally comes to the press. And what you're talking about tonight, I have no idea what health hazards are potentially there for us. Why is it America, all of a sudden, with its government, reminds us of Nazi Germany?
All right, sir. I don't know if it reminds me of Nazi Germany. William?
I'm afraid I do agree in that I have heard people who lived through the Holocaust and the rise of Hitler, I'm using their words now, Art, to say this reminds them exactly. We're talking, of course, the anti-terror legislation, the drastic curtailment of human rights and freedoms in the United States. And, you know, we were talking earlier, Art, about, you know, maybe this is a good thing after all. And
well, we just don't know because we don't know what the stakes are. William, we're out of show. We're out of time. You've given your email address. People can go to your website through mine. You're going to get a million hits, a ton of information to deal with. I'm sure you're going to be on the air again soon with me. I've got something briefly I need to get on the air in the last minute of the show. So I'm going to say, brother, thank you so much.
Art, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much for staying with this story.
I will continue to stay with it. And the minute I have to be with it again, you know how to get hold of me instantly, right?
Absolutely.
Take care.
You bet.
All right. I was just handed a note by my wife. Now, this is pretty weird stuff, folks. She tells me that there is what she believes to be a hot air balloon flying over our house, my house, our house, right now. Now, here on the West Coast, it's coming up on 2 o'clock in the morning. And I can't imagine in my wildest dreams why there would be a hot air balloon flying over our house. But what I would ask is the following. I know that many of you are listening here in Pahrump on KNYE, 95.1 on your FM dial. So I'm not sure of the direction of this balloon. Just she informs me it's flying over our house right now, so I'm obviously going to run out and check out the situation at the moment. Would some of the rest of you here in Pahrump take a look-see, too? Why would a hot air balloon at low altitude be flying over our house at 2 o'clock in the morning here in Pahrump, Nevada? That's one for the books. Yes, they are. I'm going to go out and take a look. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Thank you, Will Thomas, to all of you. Ta-ta. Some of them want to get used by
some of them.